This is a podcast from ABC Local Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. We are talking about amateur theatrics. Were you in a school play or maybe an amateur show? How did you feel as you stood on the stage just before the curtains opened? Maybe you've seen an outstanding show that you'd like to tell us about. It might be recently, or it might have been years ago, but it certainly has stayed in your memory. Perhaps you saw someone who would go on to become famous in a small role, and you followed their career as they became a star, knowing that you were amongst the first to spot their talent. Amateur theatre has always been strong in Australia, especially in country towns. Someone who has seen more shows than most is David Spicer, ABC reporter, but also the publisher of Australia's leading magazine and website devoted to the theatre, Stage Whispers. And David, a very good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
You know, I was talking about this about an hour ago or so, but it's just been announced in Ireland that every primary school child in the country will be taken to the theatre at least once a year. Why do you think that's important?
Well, it really stimulates people, and it's like there's nothing like live theatre. I mean, we watch things on television, but live theatre is always different. It's always different. I mean, I just read an interview with Meryl Streep, who's been in that magnificent movie at the moment about Florence Taylor Jenkins. And she's a magnificent actress, and every time she did a different take, it was always different. Yeah. So you don't get that in cinema, because it's always different, it's fresh, and you know, particularly all the resources that go into a big production, all the different people. I mean, particularly these really large musical societies. You know, they have literally teams of ants behind the scenes making costumes, building sets, and, you know, they can be very, very sophisticated.
That's the people on stage or backstage. The audience, though, of course, is different, because when you go in, you know, there's that settling into your seat, the curtain has not yet gone up, you don't know what it's going to be like, and there's that sort of buzz of expectation. It's certainly unlike any other artistic moment, isn't it?
Well, there's all the complexity behind a production. I mean, you know, even a little suburban amateur theatre company, they're putting as much money into that as you can buy a small car. You know, there's the lighting, the sound, the design, the set, the costumes, the directions. So many things need to go right to make it absolutely fantastic. And you know, amateur theatre, you go to it, and generally speaking, you're going to get tremendous value, and you'll often be surprised at the talent you'll see on stage.
Well, Chris from Dorigo says that the Dorigo Theatre Group are a fantastic group of actors, and Michael Vlasto is one of the best Shakespearean actors I've ever seen, says Chris. So you never can tell. So how good is the quality of amateur theatre these days in Australia?
Well, there's about, I think, 800 or clubs around Australia. And look, you know, what you do is people, being an actor, to earn your crust as an actor is a pretty tough gig. And what you have is a lot of talented people. There might be a banker, there might be a teacher, there might be in the local fire brigade. And, you know, they can't make a living as an actor, but they get their experience in amateur theatre. Now, one of the loveliest stories I heard is The Boy from Oz, which I helped license across Australia. I've seen 19 productions of it.
Wow.
I saw Penrith Musical Society, which is in Sydney's West, last week, and they did a fantastic job. But the story I love the most is when it was on in Townsville. The president of the North Queensland Music Theatre Company up there, he auditioned for the role, and he makes kitchen cabinets. That's his day job. And he auditioned for the role and he got it. And the gorgeous story about him was that not only did he sing and dance on a piano, he also built it.
Wow.
So he was Peter Allen by night, and the next minute they'd turn up to build people's kitchen cabinets. And they'd go, "Oh, haven't I seen you somewhere before? Why is your voice a bit raspy?" And he said, "Oh, I've been hoofing it up all night. Now I've got to get back to work."
Has it always been the case in Australia that we've had this strong tradition?
Well, we've got the British and American tradition of amateur theatricals, and they used to be called. It has evolved, and essentially, many of the clubs are older than 100 years old. Like the Mosman Musical Society, I think, is 110 years of age. There's the Northam Group in outside of Perth, which I think is like 120 years
wow.
old. And there's the Goulburn Leader Players in regional New South Wales. They're over a century.
Good Lord.
And then there was a huge surge of them in the 30s. Of course, they didn't always survive. Now, there's two camps. There's the drama camps and then there's the musical societies.
Yes.
The musical societies used to be called, for instance, CLOCK, which is in Melbourne. It was originally called the Cheltenham Light Operatic.
Oh, yes, Light Opera.
Light Opera. So it was CLOCK. Everything was CLOCK, MLOCK, PLOS. and so then they became, but they stopped doing operetta, and so they became musical society. They became, you know, they became just musicals. And look, you know, some clubs live, some of them they die. But the ones that have got sort of, you know, good heads on them, on the production committees, when they go for decades, and a lot of them have very large assets. They literally sit on real estate. I mean, I loved going to see the Lilydale Athenaeum Players in Melbourne. We have the most gorgeous theatre down there in regional, just out of Melbourne. And they've got a Dame Millie Melba display in the foyer. When you walk in, you get a cup of tea, a complimentary cup of tea. Then at an interval, you get a glass of wine. And, it's just a gorgeous experience where you go into this beautiful venue, which they own, look after and treasure, and, see a play, and then, all for $20, $25. So, a lot of them, particularly in regional New South Wales, where real estate is cheaper, you know, they'll all have their shed. You know, Bendigo Theatres. I walked in a rehearsal of Mary Poppins last year, and they were in their large shed. And so they've got real estates, and a lot of them put on their little plays in their own venue. In Sydney, you've got the Genesian Theatre, which have got a lovely converted church, which puts on seven or eight plays a year, a very high standard. And as you said, you do see the stars. Now, the Genesian Theatre Company
famously.
In Sydney, famous for, you know, Baz Luhrmann.
Brian Brown,
John Bell. Now, Tom Sweeney from the Willoughby Musical Theatre Company is very famous for being tough on a young Hugh Jackman. he only got a role in the chorus.
Well. Have you, I was going to ask this later, but I might ask about it now. Has there been a time very early on in a celebrity, or someone who became a big star, a celebrity's career, when you saw them in one of these amateur productions and thought, wow, whatever it is, you've got it?
Well, I have never sort of spotted a star. I think the Hugh on stage. I mean, off the dot. I mean, I went to university with Hugh Jackman. Mm-hmm. I went to college with him, but I didn't know he was going to be Hugh Jackman at that stage.
Big mistake.
So often they might be in the chorus. So
yes.
You've got to, you know. Gemma Ricks, for instance, she's currently starring in Ghost. And was the Green Witch in Wicked.
Yes.
She started out in the Gosford Musical Society.
Oh, okay.
But she was in the chorus. So, you know, that's
okay.
You know, they might not necessarily be the star, but certainly there are, you know, plenty, you know, it is the training ground.
Indeed. So I'll tell you a couple of examples. Lorena Gore, who's one of the stars, leading singers with Opera Australia these days, sopranos, I saw in a school production of Guys and Dolls, and she stood out like you wouldn't believe. And also Jessica Tuvey, who was in Home and Away. She played Belle in Home and Away. I'd seen her in a school production of Seven Little Australians, where it was obvious she was head and shoulders above everybody else in that cast. There was something about that star quality that she had, and I wasn't surprised when I then saw her on TV as well. Do any of these shows make money, or is that not the point?
Well, essentially, the traditional model is they're run by non-for-profit organisations, and because they're run by these incorporated organisations, they don't pay tax. So, essentially, if they're well-run, they do make money. I mean, it's a very interesting issue of who gets paid in amateur theatre.
Yes. Yep.
And certainly some people do get paid, because you might have the sound and light man that gets paid. If it's a musical society, the orchestra players might get paid a payment each. The director might be paid. So some clubs are purely amateur, where absolutely no one gets paid. But generally speaking, a well-run club will budget to make a surplus, to have some money in the kitty, to keep running the organisation. And you can tell by the fact that these groups have got, you know, large assets, like the Gosford Musical Society north of Sydney. It's got a shed, it's got about three properties, and, you know, country towns have, you know, quite often clubs have got properties. So, yes, if they don't make a profit, they die, because they need to have money.
That's right.
Put on the next one,
and that only gets more expensive. What about school productions? Because some of the ones I have seen the last couple of years have been certainly of professional standard. I've been amazed, and they are big productions. I've seen Hairspray and Shout, amongst others, that I was absolutely knocked out about how good they are. What about school productions?
Well, there is a tapestry and a standard, and which, you know, varies, but certainly, I mean, I've been surprised at the resources that some schools put in it. I mean, I was connected with the production of Paris at the St Andrews Cathedral College in Sydney, and about 5 or 6 years ago.
This is the John English musical.
The John English rock opera based on the Trojan Wars. Now, the school principal there said, look, we're not teaching for the next month, we're putting on a show. And, you know, literally the resources and the energy put into it was incredible. I know that in Launceston there's a great tradition of putting on huge musical societies, musicals by the local school there. And, you know, if they put it on in their local civic centre, you know, the venue's professional. They bring in, they might hire a professional director. They might get professional sound and lighting teams. So, you know, generally, you're going to get a very high standard production. Mm. I mean, not everyone is going to be like that. But I too get shocked at, you know, they might, a school, I just got a school in Townsville which last week sold, you know, $50,000 worth of tickets for their production.
Amazing. And if you read Shane Jacobson's autobiography, he goes on and on and on about gang shows, the Scout gang shows, and how they really helped him develop his, you know, his stagecraft, his ability to perform in front of a live audience. What are some of the shows over the years that you've seen that really stand out, amateur either musicals or plays, that you thought, wow, that is as good, if not better, than a professional production?
Well, I was lucky enough to be in the gang show too. And I spent 10 years in the gang show, got my 10-year scarf. And I heard Shane Jacobson speak recently as well. He's I think he's the chief scout in Victoria.
Right, okay.
And he literally, like a sponge, learnt everything about it. And he would do everything. He would do all the backstage, all the technical stuff. And that was instrumental in eventually getting him a career in show business. So it's a terrific story, Shane Jacobson. Look, I mean, the blockbusters, what happens is that there's a bit of competition for when the next blockbuster comes out, that a lot of clubs really devote huge resources, and they might, you know, we're talking big bucks. If I put $100,000 down,
really?
Just to the production, you know, so there was an amazing high standard of Phantoms of the Operas that was on all around Australia just last year. They were of very high standard, you know, as you said, Hairsprays has gone around Australia. The Boy from Oz, I've seen plenty of fantastic productions of The Boy from Oz. Clock in Melbourne, which is run by Grant Alley, he's a retired Coles Myer executive, and his mission in life is to make the most super-duper musical society that he can. And they always have a tradition of remote control devices on the stage. So they literally, I saw a remote control grand piano moving without anyone pushing it. And, you know, so they've reached, now Wicked is the next big blockbuster on the amateur theatre stage. Mm-hmm. And Clock has built a set, which is the template, which they've had, you know, I think they've had 20 people making the sets and costumes for sort of 6 months. And then they've, you know, it is incredibly high standard. Now, that set, that production, is then shared around Australia for the next year with 10 other clubs in all states, I think, hiring the set. So they and also Mary Poppins was a very high standard around Australia with an incredible set. So, I mean, look, if you've never seen these shows before and you walk in off the street and you pay, you know, you're paying $40 plus for a top amateur musical society, you know, you'll be blown away at the high standard. If you're there saying, well, look, how does it compare to Broadway? Well, your experience will be
of
different.
Of course, that's right. I mean, it's ludicrous, really, that anyone should compare it. However, I remember when I first went to Canberra, which has an unbelievably strong amateur theatre ethos and culture in Canberra, and I saw the Canberra Philharmonic production, I think it was of Guys and Dolls, or 42nd Street, I think it was, in fact. I thought, well, this is as good as anything I have seen professionally done, because they were all really good at what they did. The set was incredible, the cast was remarkable as well. Now, we've talked mostly about musicals. What about plays? Are they easier to perform because you generally don't need to have an orchestra or a band? You don't need to teach people to sing, or you don't need to have singers, that it's in fact just a lot simpler to perform?
Well, I'm a music theater. I have music theater in my blood, so I would definitely say plays are much easier. I mean, certainly it's less complicated. And you'll generally find that for a musical, you'll have a four-month rehearsal schedule where they'll spend the first 3 or 4 weeks working on music. And then you've got the sort of sits probe where you sit down with the orchestra. And certainly with a play, it's less complexity. But, of course, you know, it takes a great deal of skill and polish and panache to do it well. But certainly, look, I think it's evenly divided between musicals and plays, the groups.
Okay. Are they mostly one or the other, or are there clubs or groups that do both, plays and musicals? If you're in a country town, for example, would there be a dramatic society and a musical society?
Generally speaking, they are separate. That they use different venues. They can do, you know, can do a much smaller venue. You'll find I mean, a lot of these drama groups might have a sophisticated playbill and do a bit of both. I think the Port Macquarie Players are one in the northern New South Wales where they do a bit of both and they own their own venue. And they've got the Brisbane Arts Theatre is a terrifically sophisticated organisation. It's in the CBD. It does a string of children's plays and musicals, and then it does commercial-oriented plays, and then it does musicals, and they literally, I think, sell something like $600,000-$700,000 worth of tickets a year, and employ 3 or 4 people.
Wow.
So that's and they have they've been going for a long time. They've got a board, they've got employees, but everyone on stage does it for the love of it.
Okay, David Spicer is our guest, publisher of Stage Whispers magazine, and we'd like to know from you whether you have had an experience, maybe on stage, backstage, or in the audience at amateur productions, whether it be a musical, whether it be a play, whether it be at school. We'd love to hear from you. Maybe you went to a show that you wanted to, or you wanted to tell us about, you thought it was fantastic. It could have been something that you saw last week. It might have been something you saw 20 years ago. Perhaps you did see a big star before they became famous. I would love to hear a story about that, about maybe you did see Hugh Jackman in the, high school production of whatever it was that he did. Or maybe you saw Brian Brown in the Genesian Theatre. We'd love to hear from you. Peter says, in 2005, my wife and I took our boy, 5 years old, to the local theatre group production of Oklahoma. He loved it. We bought the DVD, watched that over and over again. Asked to join the local dance group, did tap for a year, realised dancing wasn't for him and has played football ever since. Well, I hope he used those tap dancing skills in football, but was certainly inspired by the musical, which was nice. So that's one of the great things. If you get people early, David, then they should hopefully love it for life.
Absolutely. And one of the remarkable features is the dedication of the volunteers. Now, there's networks of awards for amateur theatre around Australia. and you'll find these judges, they will trudge along to 30, 40, 50 productions a year. They deserve a medal. There's the Cat Awards, which started off in Canberra, but have spread their wings to all across regional New South Wales.
Now, I've had a lot to do with the Cat Awards over the years. I've hosted them. I was on their committee. Coralie Wood is the woman behind the Cat Awards. She's unbelievable, indefatigable, you would say. But yes, the fact that these began as a little awards for Canberra, and now people from cities and towns all over New South Wales want to be part of it, because there isn't that sort of thing in New South Wales, and thankfully for the Cat Awards, but it means those judges have to go all the way from Bega up to, you know, Narrabri and places like that.
Yes, well, that shows a lot of dedication. Now, the Independent Theatre Association of Western Australia has an awards as well, and it hasn't been too uncommon for them to travel from Perth to Broome.
Wow, to judge, that is
to something. To judge an amateur theatre. That is incredible dedication.
Yeah.
And in Victoria, we've got the Music Theatre Guild, which has a tremendous tradition of judging musicals, and they have if you go along to the Guild or Music Theatre Guild Awards in Melbourne or Ballarat or Geelong, wherever they held it each year, you will see a phenomenal sampling of entertainment.
Okay. And I would say that for the Cat Awards in Canberra as well. Every February or so, they have those awards, and it's an amazing night of extraordinary talent.
Yes, I mean, we always tease Coralie that it finishes at whether it'll finish before midnight, but there's always something there.
Yes,
some amazing talent you'll see. But they also integrate the schools. They have the schools and the amateur theatres, which makes it a huge night, and there's usually terrific entertainment. I think this year I missed the Cat Awards for the first time in a long time, but a local school did Barnum, and they literally built an elephant. They had an elephant prop walk onto the stage, which was quite remarkable. But I think, yes, there's awards in South Australia, I think, organised. Yes, they're quite strong. There's drama awards organised by the Victorian Drama League in Melbourne, which is a lovely, elegant evening. That they don't actually have excerpts, but they have during the night. They have, but it's usually a very elegant night when they give their awards. And
often, I was going to say, the worst thing about those nights is that you see all these shows, you see highlights from them, that the show's gone. The show's closed months and months earlier, and you've never got the chance to see it.
Well, that's right. And I mean, there is remarkable talent out there. Like, I mean, I'll name one person. Christopher Hamilton, who's one of the stars of the community theatre scene in Greater Sydney. Now, his career was in the banking, so,
right.
Very bright, but a brilliant, brilliant actor, who does it for the love of it, and has the pick of the lead roles and does it with panache, and, could be on the professional stage, but needs to earn a living.
Indeed. Let's take some calls now. Let's start with Colin. Good morning, Colin.
Yeah, good morning, right? How are you?
Going very well, Colin. You've been involved in Wollongong.
Yes, Wollongong, down here in Wollongong with local groups like Arcadians and Ruth Theatre and that sort of stuff. I've done it for about 25 years.
And what have you played? What roles?
Oh, probably we'll start off with just some of my biggest roles have been Harold Hill and Music Man. I've played Bill Sykes and Oliver, Patsy and Spamalot, Uncle Fester in Adam's Family.
Okay. So a mix of old and new musicals.
Yeah, it's a bit different. I've done a lot of mostly musicals. I've also done a few dramas. Just finished 39 Steps down here recently.
Ooh, so all right. Well done. Okay, Colin, thank you very much for that. I'll get David to comment on that in a second, but I'll talk to Anthony next. Good morning, Anthony.
I enjoyed the punk bit, but I'm going to talk about David and Ron, which I suppose you haven't mentioned yet, but that's almost like the US Marine Corps where they handle it. They do the whole lot themselves. They're not like Army-Navy separation or drama and music. Gilbert and Sullivan, they do it all themselves. They're self-contained. And I used to do, Ian Lamphere used to do the chorus here in Sydney, way back when. And I've still been doing AV and lighting. I do Sydney Festival and ex-Opera House production. But the great thing about Gilbert and Sullivan, during the 1996 election year in Oregon, the Mikado can be adapted to suit the election year. You can change the lyrics. Like the Lord High Executioner can be a political character that everyone in Portland, Oregon recognises.
Ooh,
you know,
hello.
Before. So you can adapt. The brilliant thing about Gilbert and Sullivan, I find, you can adapt, change and fiddle with the lyrics to suit any occasion.
I love it. Anthony, thank you very much. My parents, very much involved in the Gilbert and Sullivan Society in Grafton in the 60s. David Spicer is our guest, publisher of Stage Whispers, Performing Arts Magazine. Where's Gilbert and Sullivan these days?
Oh, my favourite topic. I was part of the Savoy Arts Players in Mosman, who they're now called the Gilbert and Sullivan Sydney. And I played Strephon in Iolanthe and Frederick and Pirates of Penzance. So, look, the Gilbert and Sullivan, so often when you look through the traditions of these great musical societies, that was the bread and butter of the first productions that so often, like Clock in Melbourne, their first production was the Pirates of Penzance, the second one was HMS Pinafore, third was Mikado. Now, of course, there was a great boon for amateur theatre when it was 50 years had passed since the death of all the creators, and they could do it royalty free. Hooray!
And that really makes a big, big difference. Although, what's the story today? Is that why we see a lot of old musicals being performed? Because some of the ones that some of our callers have mentioned are very, very modern ones.
Yes, look, generally speaking, the ones that are out of copyright are used. I mean, it means that the composer and the writer have been dead 70 years, it's very long in the tooth, and you know, they generally don't sell the best unless they're absolute pot boilers. But so overall, Gilbert and Sullivan, you know, it is done less than it was in the heyday. But, you know, there are still the dedicated GNS societies, and of course then there are the there are the modern updates of
Pirates. Well, we saw that hugely with John English in particular on a professional basis. Janet, good morning.
Good morning. I'm a ex-president of the Gold Coast Little Theatre.
Very nice.
And they've been going probably nearly 65 years, I think. But back in 1983, we raised over $360,000 to build our new little theatre on our own little block of land, which is now almost in the centre of Southport, worth a fortune. And I think one valuable thing that all these theatre groups do is that they also provide a social outlet for people, because even if you come along and you don't know anybody else, very quickly you will know everybody else.
Yeah.
And
a lot of romances backstage and on stage, I would think.
And you make long-life friends from it. The other thing I just wanted to quickly mention is that back in 1962, I think it was, the Southport State High School put on Pygmalion. And in the little RSL hall in Southport that's since been demolished. And the young lass that played Eliza, or played the female lead, she has recently been chosen by Dame Julie Andrews to play, I think, the role of Mrs. Pierce, the housekeeper.
Wow, in the latest production.
In the My Fair Lady that's to be staged at the Opera House. So she's gone from a little RSL hall that's been demolished to the Opera House. It's amazing.
Beautiful story.
Yes, wonderful story.
Janet, thank you very much for that. David, that's the thing also with these musicals and plays is that, you know, there's quite often a variety of roles, and you start out as the ingenue and you end up as the housekeeper.
Well, it's interesting that there's a great difference between the sorts of productions which are absolutely perfect for amateur theatre and which are performed by small professional theatre companies. So you've got the Griffin Theatre, as a little example, in Sydney, which does specialist Australian new plays, but they've got three or four. They can only ever afford to pay three or four actors, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and even the Melbourne Sydney Theatre companies, they occasionally do the big cast ones. Often they'll do the four or five. Now, amateur theatre, the more roles, the better.
Yes, that's right.
The more the merrier. That's what you're looking for. You know, when they say, oh, there are 11 female roles and 7 male roles, perfect. That's the perfect sort of, you know.
That's exactly right. And I remember seeing 12 Angry Men done by the students at a seminary, because it's very difficult to get a play, perhaps, or a musical not that 12 Angry Men was a musical, but it was a play with all men in it. I mean, there's always a role for, you know, women or more than one woman, of course, in most plays. And, yes, so that was great that they got a 12 Angry Men. They had all student priests. Let's talk to Jerry. G'day, Jerry.
Yeah, g'day, mate. How you
going? Fine. You started at school.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, I'm an ex-student at Pine River State High School up here in Brisbane. And I was part of the backstage crew. But we did the musicals of Blues Brothers, Oklahoma.
Really?
What was the other? Pirates of Penzance.
Yeah. The and Blues Biden Brothers. Dolls. Hang on. Blues Brothers musical. I don't know that one.
Yeah, it's like Blues Brothers, the movie.
How'd you do the car chase?
We actually had a Volkswagen Beetle, which the motor and stuff was taken off, and it was actually lifted up onto the stage, and we actually sort of pushed it around a bit with a backstage crew all in black.
Wow. So is that the new Bluesmobile or what?
Yeah, well, it was supposed to resemble it. It was actually pretty good, but, yeah, we had to get forklifts in to lift it all up, and there was a lot of set movement, I know, with the Pirates of Penzance.
Yeah.
But that actually led me on to, at the time, the economy was going pretty good. I actually started doing a bit of voluntary work for the Akron Theatre in lighting and audio and visual stuff.
Yes.
And I went to start a career in audio and visual sort of work, but well, then the economy had changed and it all sort of fell over.
Oh, dear.
But, yeah, no, yeah, I haven't been to Pine River High now for over, it'd be almost 15 years now. But, that's my experience with theatre.
Hey, Jerry, thank you very much for that. Blues Brothers on stage, David.
I don't know whether they got the rights for that. I think we'd better, a bit of hush-hush.
Okay. Because one of the great things about amateur theatre, whether it be musicals or plays, is that you do see shows that they simply do not perform on the main stages. And that's, you know, you see these shows and you think, wow, I've always wanted to see Life of Brian, the musical, which I saw in Coomer one day, or any of the other ones that they do. It's just a fantastic opportunity.
Well, that's right, because, you know, if you think about it, there's a lot of plays in a year performed if you're in Sydney or in Melbourne or in Brisbane, but you know, less so is certainly if you're in the country, you've got a much narrower band. But and you do get the opportunity, you know, a musical or a play might be on Broadway or the West End, and it might simply not be viable to bring it out to Australia, or you might have missed it. Now, if people are interested in finding out what's on, I help run a website by the Association of Community Theatre.
That's a great website.
Which is www.communitytheatre.com.au, which lists what's on in New South Wales. And there are similar services elsewhere around Australia. And also Stage Whispers magazine has a on its website, it has a what's on, which people can also list for free what's happening.
All right.
That's an issue is finding that play or musical that you always wanted to see. How do you know it's on? Now, I remember there was a lady who used to drive around the suburbs of Sydney looking at the billboard.
Yes, that's sometimes the only way you knew that Maid of the Mountains was on.
That's right, to find out what's on. And then when she found that the Association of Community Theatre put out this brochure which listed all of the shows that are on in her locality, she was happy as Larry and saw 50 to 60 productions a year.
Wow, good Lord, that's more than one a week. Anne, good morning.
Oh, hello. I'm really enjoying this program.
Thank you,
Maya. Yes, I'm quite an elderly person and I still sing and I'm very happy that I can still sing. But going right back to the 1950s, I had an audition at the same time as Jill Perryman.
And they don't tell me they chose her and not you.
They did.
Oh, what? They didn't know what they were talking about.
And at the time I thought, I'm sure my voice is better than hers. Which is now normal, I'm sure. But I always enjoyed going to see her on the stage because I am from Sydney.
But hang on, you're still performing and she's giving it away, Anne.
Oh, yes, but I belong to a big choir in Bundaberg, the Orpheus Singers.
Ooh, okay.
And I've been able to sing some of the most beautiful, beautiful music. And I just love it. And I still do solo work at funerals.
Oh, okay.
And I'm just so happy that I'm able to still sing. But the local Bundaberg Players, they own their own theatre and they put on some remarkable shows. And some years ago, they combined with the Orpheus Singers because of the wonderful voices, and they put on Les Mis. Now, that I had seen Les Mis in Brisbane, and that amateur production was equal to the professional one.
Exactly.
I was so moved. It was just brilliant. And it's amazing the talent out there, isn't it?
I couldn't agree with you more, Anne, and I can't believe they chose Jill Perryman over Anne. Really, what were they thinking, David?
Well, look, you know, there's nothing like the bitterness of losing at an audition. It's a bitter pill. You know, we all have to take it. I always wanted to play Mottl the Tailor in Fiddler on the Roof. Yes. And I think I auditioned for the Canterbury Theatre Guild and got to the last two, and I was so annoyed I didn't get it. But then the Strathfield Musical Society were putting it on. So I murdered the audition, absolutely slaughtered it and got it. Got the role, and it was 1992.
Wow.
And my fiancée hated watching me on stage getting married to somebody else.
Every night.
Hated it.
And one of the things we should remember is sometimes these run for only a weekend or something. All that work that goes on for months and it's all over in about four or five performances. We'll get to Tom and George in a moment, but St. John is next. G'day, St. John.
G'day, Rod. I want to tell you that the St. Luke's Theatre Society at Ekeburn Road East in Brisbane, back in the 80s, I'm up on the farm now, of course,
but I
played the Chief of Police in Viva Mexico. And the most significant thing, of course, was the Mexican hat dance, La Cucaracha. And the dancing was done by the school children. And we had to have two sets of school children because they could only do a couple of nights a week. And we trained for 7 months and we put on 13 shows in 17 nights.
Wow,
and we raised $8,000 in those days for the Board of Missions in New Guinea.
Good Lord.
That's my story, mate.
That's a good one, St. John. Thank you very much for that. Now, Peter says, David Spicer, you will wish to comment on this. The downside to the local theatre groups in towns is that it sometimes causes marriage separation when the husband of one marriage and the wife of another are in the production with late-night rehearsals, etc. There have been a couple of marriage separations in our town, says Peter.
Well, it's sad but true because opportunity knocks, doesn't it? It's where else do you get the chance to sort of...
Look, can I just say, seriously, if you are a bloke who wants to meet, you know, someone your own age, talented, you know, join one of these societies. There's plenty of women who are in them who are only too happy to
it's like being a male ballet dancer.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, you could be teased for being a male ballet dancer, but if you're straight, my goodness, you've got a harem.
That's right, and unlike saying playing footy where it's nothing but blokes. Now,
that's right.
Tom, good morning.
Good morning, David. Good morning, Rod. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, Tom. You've also trod the boards.
I a long time ago, but that was another life. But I started in year 12 in high school, and I was a chorus member in our class production of Frankenstein.
Ooh, wow.
It was very, very interesting. And, we did receive requests to do extra shows, and we'd only planned on doing three shows, and we wound up doing an extra weekend of six shows. So it was very, very well received. Then I went and joined the local community theater group known as the Curtain Players, named after Tom Curtin, the former Park and Rec director who passed away suddenly, and he was well loved. And he started this theater idea, and my good friend Barbara Partis was the seamstress, and her daughters, Renee and Janice, would help out immensely, and they were excellent seamstresses.
This is in Delaware, Tom?
No, it was in Waterbury, Connecticut, as a matter of fact.
Well, that's one of the great theater towns.
Well, I tell you, yes, it is. Rosalind Russell came from there.
Exactly right. And, and I'm sure a lot of out-of-town tryouts there as well before they headed
over.
Oh,
yeah. We had our community theater. We did a lot of music. Well, that's mainly what we did. We did a winter musical and a summer musical. Yeah. And we did Fiddler on the Roof in 1979. Pardon me, and it was so well received that again they wanted more shows, so we put on 6 shows rather than the 3.
Okay.
And as David was saying, you know, you get these practice, you rehearse for months and months and months just to do 3 shows.
I know. Tom, but I'm glad that you've had that experience. We don't need to go through all of them. We got one more.
No, but in 1989, we were asked to redo Fiddler on the Roof.
Okay, right.
And instead of being in a chorus, I got to be Reb Murka.
Oh, all right.
So that was cool. Only because I worked in a bar.
Tom, thank you very much for that. And I think the last call of this morning is George. Good morning, George.
Good morning, Rod. And just take this opportunity to publicly thank David for all the work that he's put in over the years, not only in the magazine, but you know, in helping put on productions, he and Neil Litchfield, I know, works for the magazine, have done stellar work, and so I'd just like to publicly acknowledge him. And I don't know if our talk last week where I mentioned that production of Catch Me If You Can inspired this thing.
Partly inspired, because then we got a text about Box Hill, Gilbert and Sullivan, and I thought, why not? A lot of people have had experience.
Well, the reason I mentioned that, because I think I mentioned that I spoke to the president of the Willoughby Society and said that production was so good it could go straight on the stage of the Lyric Theatre at the Star Casino. Well, that president was Tom Sweeney, who Dave was talking about earlier, who demoted to Hugh Jackman to the chorus. So, you know, the standards are very high. But I just wanted to mention briefly, because I know we're running out of time, one area that hasn't been mentioned. You were interested in spotting people before they were famous.
Yes, indeed.
University dramatic societies are also another area, like John Bell and Richard Ware, all those guys created the Nimrod Theatre, started there. And I saw Neil Armfield before he was famous. He was actually at Sydney University Dramatic Society. And he did a very legendary production of a British play, Give Me Shelter, where they actually created a whole cricket a side screen within a very small theatre. But that launched a lot of careers, because at the after party, which I went to, the person who praised Neil and said he's going on to great things, we all know how great he is and he's going to be a shining light of the Australian theatre, the person who delivered that speech was Michael Gow, who went on to become one of Australia's great modern playwrights, and also is in charge of, I think, Queensland Theatre Company.
Queensland, yes, that's right, yeah. George, give us one that really, really stood out. You've seen so many of them. What is one that you think, even now, you think, wow, that was sensational?
Oh, God.
There's so many to choose from, I know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there was the original production of the Noi Naro's play, The Golden Age, at NIDA. Now, I know it's a dramatic, training thing, but that was just gobsmacking. But,
that's all right, mate. No worries.
You put me on the spot there, Rod.
I'm sorry. We'll talk about it again, I'm sure. Thanks, George.
Okay, cheers.
All right. David Spicer. If people are thinking, look, I don't want to see them, but I don't want to see people who don't know what they're doing, what would you say to them?
Well, look, it's part of the rich tapestry. I mean, particularly, see a work, like Catch Me If You Can at Willoughby was sensational. You couldn't see that on the professional stage, and it was done brilliantly. And so, you know, there are some people that turn their noses up at it, but, I mean, really, it depends where you live and what you've got access to. And there's a great community spirit. I'll finish up with this wonderful story. Scott Morrison's the Treasurer of Australia. Yes. His parents are John and Marion. They ran the Waverley Lugubre Players for 30, 40 years in the cities and suburbs. Now, Scott Morrison's father was the local police inspector. And there was a wonderful story in the Daily Telegraph, because he was cast as the role as Fagin.
Yes.
Local police inspector.
Yes.
Leads a gang of pickpockets.
Lovely stuff. Now, John in Melbourne says, does David know anything about the Williamstown Little Theatre?
I've heard about them, but they're part of the great tradition in Victoria of these wonderful drama groups.
as I said, like the Lilydale Athenaeum players, where you walk in, you get a drink, you get a cake, right. and they just put on wonderful little plays in their own little venue, which they love. So I think they're part of that wonderful tradition in Melbourne, which is quite unique.
Okay, what's the next show you're going to see, David?
The next show that I'm going to see? Well, look, I actually, having a week off theatre sometimes is like bliss, because I literally do go three or four times a week to professional amateur theatre. So I'd have to look up my diary, I see a bit of everything.
All right, communitytheatre.com.au, stagewhispers.com.au, davidspicer.com.au, websites that you're involved with that if people are interested in what is playing in their local area, then certainly have a look at that. David, thank you so much for waking up so early to talk to us this morning.
Pleasure.
David Spicer, publisher of Stage Whispers Performing Arts Magazine, and of course he also here at the ABC. Well, that's another podcast from ABC Local Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. Thanks for listening.